Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn. I run the services at MedComsNetworking.com. So, information services, resources, activities for people who work across the globe in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, and so on. And we're doing a lot of these webinars. We record them, we put them over on Network Pharma TV. You'll find hundreds of videos now. But it gives us an opportunity, the webinars give us an opportunity to bring people together from around the world. And we've got quite a sizable international audience again. And get experts in the room together, and we can talk about all manner of topics. I'm looking forward to today. I'll be completely honest. I'm looking forward to today. We're just kind of a freewheeling discussion. We've got three specialists from different sides of the business talking about this, or questioning, I guess, whether we are entering a new era of medical writing. I think a lot of us think there has been some change over the last year or two. I know it's an evolution over time, but something seems a little bit different at the moment. And we thought it'd be fun just to talk and throw some ideas around and maybe argue a bit with each other about what is different and the direction we're going in over the coming year or two. We've got this big audience, which is great. I would like to say to the audience, please, you've got your chat box boxes, please. As we're talking, send us your questions, observations, and comments, and so on, and join the discussion like that. Okay, we're hoping to make some people think out there. So help us do that. So to begin with, we're going to start very simply. I'm going to ask each to introduce themselves, and then we're just going to go for a free room discussion for about 45 minutes or so. Annette, we've decided we're going in alphabetical order as usual. So Annette, can you tell us who you are, what you do?
I certainly can. So, thanks, Peter, first of all, for inviting me to be on this webinar today, and hi to everybody from around the world. So, I am Executive Scientific Director at Langland, part of the Publicis Group. I look after basically all our medical writers within Langland. I've realised it's my 20th year in MedComms, so it's a big year for me this year. Over 10 of those, I've been managing writing teams. So, I'm really passionate about good quality medical writing and about what value medical writers can add, and also about how we evolve as a profession. So I'm really looking forward to the discussions today. It's certainly a very changing world at the moment, so I think it's an exciting time, and there's definitely lots of things that we can have some good discussions about. So, looking forward to it. And I'll pass on
Excellent.
to Eleanor now.
Thanks, Annette. Eleanor, come on, you tell us who you are, what you do.
Super. Yes. Hi, everybody. I am Eleanor Steele and I work as the MedComms mentor. I'm going to echo what Annette said. We have been having a parallel career, I think, because I've also been in MedComms for 20 years this year. And I started in the sort of medical writing side of things and was running teams of writers in various different agencies from about 2012 onwards. But in 2018, I went freelance. And since 2020, I've been working as the MedComms mentor, providing specialist training and mentoring to medical writers of all career stages. So I've got the freelance aspect and the training and mentoring aspect to talk about today.
Excellent. Thanks, Ellie. And Liz, tell us who you are and where you are.
Hi, so hello everyone. Thank you. Welcome for thank you for being here. Welcome. I'm Liz. I have equally about 20 years. I think we've all kind of lived in a parallel universe, but never actually met. I started in MedComms as a medical writer after a postdoc, and then worked for from kind of associate level up to senior, and then I moved track slightly and worked in client services for a while. I've been scientific director, and then a couple of years ago, I took a career break and had a kind of rethink and took a switch over to industry side, and I landed at Roche, where I have been setting up and growing out a medical writing team internally, part of the digital content and services lab that we have here. So I just want to qualify this with the fact that I'm here as me, myself, and I today. I'm not here representing Roche. This is my experience, my opinions, and I'm kind of coming at it from seeing things now from the other side of the coin, but also with a long background in seeing things from the agency side as well.
Excellent.
So I've gone.
I was going to say, we're going to lead in with, or we're going to lead with you, Liz. So, talk to us a little bit. Let's just set the scene, how you see things are changing at the moment.
So I guess this kind of stems, doesn't it, from a conversation you and I had, Peter, a while ago at the end of 2023, and just this kind of sensation that things are maybe starting to change, but not in the sense that they haven't been changing all the way. I mean, obviously everything evolves, and but it kind of feels like things are coming together, and it's kind of coming to the crescendo of I don't know, it's not even anything really tangible. It's just lots of things coming together from different directions, things that we all probably know about, many of them, but also things that we maybe haven't noticed coming at us kind of almost unawares in the background. And I think the feeling I have is that 2024 might be the year that actually it really does practically change in medcoms, in the way we do things, the way we work, the way we deliver. And I think, yeah, I know you do kind of lots of surveys and background research with people, and I don't know what the results of the latest ones are, but it kind of getting a feel for the feeling on the ground from people is such an interesting and important thing in the industry. And I think this is a really cool opportunity to hear from other people and to also hear people's comments and what they think. So I don't know, maybe shall I start with some of the reasons that I think might be behind? I feel like 2024 needs to be the year when we stop saying digital. I mean, when was the last time that you said www dot before you said a website? Like, at some point, you just have to accept that this is just it. There's no digital versus traditional, or that, we need to stop saying it and just get on with it. The pharma industry is obviously very good at not getting on with things like that, and I think that's how we've managed to drag our feet for so long, with kind of pretending that we're special somehow, but we're not. And the rest of the world operates in ways that we take as being completely normal now. When you turn Netflix on, when you order from Amazon, any interaction you have in the digital space, you expect certain trends and like normal functionality from platforms. And I think pharma has to go the same way, undoubtedly, especially if we want to kind of engage the right audience and the right stakeholders. Obviously, AI has, it's the elephant in the room almost, but I think it's becoming a small elephant and one that we have to start taking bites at. And I think 2024 will probably be the year when we stop being so terrified of it and start to go, okay, this is just there. This is a thing. We have to use it. We use it here. We use it there. We don't really worry too much about it. We just get on with it. It's also kind of the year where modular content is starting to really get a hold in many, many ways. The idea has been around a while. It's been talked about. It's a great idea, but actually using it in practice has always been a bit of a, even in pharma, like when they've got more budget behind things, it's kind of like, well, but how do we actually do that? And now it's kind of starting to be a thing. And yeah, like, in order to do modular and in order to follow these ways of working in terms of like an omnichannel approach and interacting with stakeholders and customers in the same way that you would for Amazon or from Netflix, for example, you need to have your content and your resources in a very centralized way. It needs to be in a single source of truth. It needs to be in your asset management comes forward much more importantly. And by default, then that means that things have to be in-house to some extent, which means then that when you're working with partners, you have to make a conscious choice how much access they have and how many partners you give that level of access to. So all these things. And then, of course, we all change as well, because COVID has left its scar in many ways. But one of those is that we will never go back to working probably the way that we used to, and nor should we. But that also changes the marketplace for writers and for scientific staff and for medical directors and for everybody, really. And I think that's another thing that plays into the pot. And then the final thing I would say is, and I don't know how conscious we are of this, if we actually sit down and think of it, pharma's changing a lot as well. Like, we used to have like big blockbusters with a big launch, pre-launch and launch, and then all these very defined phases, and it was kind of always boom or bust in terms of how much writing was available and what was around and how much support was needed internally or externally. But now things are much more on a smaller scale, and it's more kind of continuous development, continuous smaller molecules, smaller launches continuously. So there's a more consistent demand, which kind of plays into the argument of, are things outsourced or insourced? And yeah, that's my perspective, and I'm really, really keen to hear other people's as well.
Okay, as I said, I mean, there's a lot of ground you covered there, actually, and I mean, I'm going to try and keep the focus very much around my medical writing and content creation and management and so on. But I mean, some of what you're touching on there is really there's quite broad questions in there in terms of how we're all working generally, let alone within pharma, within medcoms, and all the rest of it. And the point that I think is really important is we're not we're all, I think, going to be recognizing and acknowledging and saying there's been evolution. Medcoms has evolved over the last 20 years. You've been in for 20 years. I've been in for longer. You know, it's always evolved. But there's something that, but there's a lot of change at the moment. And I think you said certainly before, Liz, is like, you know, a number of things just coming together at the same time seems to be happening at the moment. And AI is sort of dominating a lot of the conversation. But it's not just AI. Maybe that's an accelerator or something. I think there's much more going on than that. So I want to pick up on a couple of things you said, but before I do, or let's see what other ones, what else gets picked up. There's a couple of important things that I wanted to pick up. I don't want to lose them. But Annette, as someone, you know, with the experience on the position that you've got on the agency side, supporting a company like where Liz is now, is any of that resonating with you?
I think a lot of what Liz said resonates, yeah. So, I mean, I think I would agree with kind of all of those. I'm not so sure. I'm not seeing so much of the in-house things going in-house personally from our experience, but maybe I'm a little bit I don't know, oblivious of the future or something. But we haven't seen anyone sort of taking work in-house yet. That's for sure. But I do agree. I mean, I'm quite I don't know. I think there's some controversies around omnichannel, to be honest. I'm quite skeptical about whether that's really even possible in pharma in the true sense versus, you know, multi-channel or something like that. So I suppose that's a, you know, potentially interesting conversation. But yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, I think all of those kind of things are changing. And I do agree that there does feel, and it's very intangible, as Liz said at the beginning, but it feels like things are starting to, like, there is going to be some kind of step change. You know, things have always evolved over those 20 years, and you know, gone are the days where you used to kind of mark up a reference pack, you know, by hand and courier off your references and things like that. You know, digital things kind of came in, but it felt like that happened quite gradually, and you know, gradually things evolved, and now, like you say, things like there's a lot of things coming together, and that, you know, they're now starting to kind of be put into action. So I would, yeah, broadly agree, yeah.
What do you see anything different from where you're sitting there?
Anything different?
To add into the mix.
Do I see anything different? That's a really good question. No, I'm not sure I do, to be honest. I think, you know, all those, I think Liz has kind of given a really broad kind of
Okay.
picture of all the things that are changing. I suppose, you know, from a kind of client perspective, I guess we've and as a big kind of network agency, we've had a few. Clients are looking for an agency that's going to cover everything. So, I mean, maybe that speaks to this whole piece about data and digital and those kinds of things, in sense that rather than wanting to kind of have several agencies, and this thing goes in peaks and troughs, you know, as you know, people go around in full circle, but it seems to be a time where pharma companies are looking for a single agency or a few agencies to deliver all of their sort of med comms. That's definitely something that we're seeing.
I mean, again, a lot of this is cyclical, and we should all recognize that we've all been through the cycles. The question is whether what's feeling like a change at the moment is just the normal, usual cycle, or whether there's something more different about it. The sort of in-house type move, you know, bringing resource in-house, pushing it back out, it's certainly been a cycle over the years that I've seen happening. But I think the point that Liz makes is really quite interesting about, you know, the importance of getting all the data inside as you're dealing with AI and things like that. I can understand that. I don't frankly know whether that's happening in the way that you've described it, but I completely understand it because traditionally, you know, let's face it, a lot of medcoms agencies, let's stick with medcoms agencies, you know, they've become the sort of the where the knowledge is. Yeah, that's always struck me as being a little bit of a tricky situation for the pharma company. But if you're going in the direction we all think we're going in terms of these big databases in-house, this management of content, this sort of whether it's called omni-channel in a couple of years' time or not, I'm not entirely convinced the label will stick. But you know, but this sort of way of managing lots of content and using it in different ways, you can't be completely reliant on this agency out there, can you? And I'm just repeating what Liz has said, but I think there's a really important point in there. And there's a real problem from an agency point of view in terms of are we just generating this content and are we becoming this sort of font of knowledge, or are we working with the client in a different sort of way because they've got all the content? I
Well, I
don't
do,
know
but
whether I
there's
may be
also
talking
more.
rubbish here, but
Well, I mean, I think on a conceptual level, there's lots of activities that happen by lots of different functions within pharma, and they're not always very well connected. And we've certainly been able to, because we have various different teams, and we're working on the advertising, and we're working on the, I don't know, the clinical trials experience, or we're working on the MSE, our medical strategy and education piece, and we've seen opportunities to be like, well, actually, we're doing this here, and you're doing this here, and wouldn't it make much more sense for us to actually do something together, or not repeat, what one function is doing? So I think there's kind of, and I know that companies are trying to kind of break down their own silos, but they're often actually a lot bigger than the agencies that are supporting, and we talk to them all the time. So sometimes we're able to do that kind of connecting, which I think is potentially quite a useful thing that agencies can offer.
But
I
to
think
butt in,
moving
is there
on.
not? Sorry, I'm going to butt in. Just let me follow my train of thought just for a second or two. But is not one of the points at the moment is that the AI type of technology and thinking and so on is about connecting people in ways that we've not simply been able to connect before. So if you are in a big company with this big database, with a simple chatbot on the front of it, where you can just turn from anywhere in the world and go, what's the latest about this or that or the other? I can just imagine that being a much more connected environment. And that, I would say, would play into what I think Liz is getting at. Is that making sense? But I mean, I have to say I'm speculating a bit from the outside, and I don't know whether we're there yet. But that's what I think AI technology is partly all about.
I'm sure it's true. I'm sure that AI is designed to kind of help connect everybody. I feel like there's a kind of still a human layer that's still
You
on
still think
there
the people
at the
mess it
moment. I
up
don't
because they
think
don't
we're
talk to
exactly
each
people. People just get on and do their own thing, and they have to
Yeah.
remember to go and actually go and ask the AI versus just think, oh, I know what's going on, so I'm just going to do my thing. There needs to be an interaction with it, and I'm sure that in the fullness of time, it will become second nature, just like all technology does. We instantly go to Google now to look up something we don't know, which maybe 15 years ago, nobody thought to do or whatever. I mean, it's like ChatGPT. We come into the sort of that part. I mean, how many people like last year really thought, oh, I want to know the answer to a question, I'm going to ask ChatGPT. They probably still went to Google and did their search, but now there are things that you're like, actually, that's a good question to ask ChatGPT, because I'm going to get a more a, I'm going to get the answer to my question more easily. But it has people need to adopt it, I suppose.
Okay.
I think.
Although we need to raise some flags there because, and they'll be raising it in the chat that ChatGPT can't be relied on and so on and so forth, which
No,
we can talk about.
of course, yeah.
Proviso, as I said.
Don't shoot me
Come on,
now. All
Ellie,
caveats.
talk about Ellie. Bring you talk about this, and you've got a fairly broad view on life, as it were, and you're training people in different situations and so on. Stick with the medical writer types that you're thinking of, and training them. Can you see it? Does any of this resonate with you? And what impact does it have in terms of medical writers and their sort of, their day-to-day work and how they are developing or need to be developed?
So I think it does resonate with me, definitely. I think there have been changes that I have seen over the 20 years I've been in med comms around the type of work that we do. I think that has blossomed into a broader range of different things, and the way that we actually have to approach content has become much more focused on being more bite-sized and digestible and repurposed into different ways that people can approach it, because it's not just you go and read the paper or you go to the presentation. There are so many more ways that HCPs are accessing information, and that means that writers need to have a more diverse range of writing skills and be able to adapt what they're doing much more than I think when I started writing. I also think that the AI tools that we have available can do a lot of those writing tasks if given appropriate prompts and have all of the right sort of security settings or what have you to make sure that there's no data leaks or anything inappropriate like that. But that you still need to actually know what good looks like as the human. You need to know what you're expecting and why you're expecting it when you put in the prompt, because otherwise you may well be putting in information and asking an AI model to do something, and you won't know whether it's actually done what you needed if you don't have that experience of having done it yourself. So I have a friend who is a patent attorney, and she's facing a very similar situation where trainees are kind of, in some ways, being expected to be replaced by this sort of AI usage, because AI can kind of find the right case law or whatever, like it can find the right data and turn out something that looks like it should, but the content inside may not be what's actually needed for that specific case or for that specific piece of content for that specific audience. And if you don't know, because you're just kind of focusing on the AI side of things, then you're not going to be doing what's needed for the client or, you know, for the internal team if you are within pharma.
Again, we're covering a lot of ground there, aren't we? I'm going to bring Liz back in on that one. Just we're going down the AI. This is going to be dominated by AI, and I get that sort of thing.
It's annoying, yeah. I guess so. That's one of the things that really terrifies me, Ellie. That a lot of the, excuse the phrase, but the grunt work that medical writers have always done will be replaced by. And let's, can I just make this very clear? We're not just talking about Gen AI and ChatGPT, but all the kind of AI tools and also the insight gathering and research and automation of like things that were just very basic tasks, and things that weren't basic tasks also, which is actually terrifying sometimes. But a lot of that will be done and replaced by AI. But then where does this go? Because if as you say, you need the human eye to check it, but the people that trained on and learned the ropes by doing that no longer do that, how are they going to check it? Because they won't know what they're looking for. They won't know what good looks like. And this is, I mean, we had a talk with an agency yesterday, like a consulting agency, not medical, but they showed us some slides, and one of they had a beautiful Gen AI image that was really perfect for the slide, except that if you look closer, you know, there were three fingers, and you're like, well, but you have to really be looking and checking. And if you just look at it at a glance, it looks completely believable and completely like, oh, it's beautiful. And the same with medical writing, you see things that are really, they look brilliant. It's only when you start going like, hang on, where did that, how does that relate, and where's that, like, you have to really know what you're looking for, what the gaps might be. I think one thing I would also mention at this point is that because of the retrieval and the research that will be done by AI, and also the insight generation that will be done by AI, one thing that we have to start thinking about is not just like not thinking of our consumers being the human that consumes that content, but also the robots that scan that content and the databases that use that content. So it's no good trying to target something at a specific person and hoping that like that hits its mark. What you need to be doing is thinking, where do we need to put this information that it will be picked up in whatever form it needs to be picked up by whatever tool picks it up, to then go into the information when somebody types into Google or into ChatGPT, what's the latest, blah, blah, blah. Like, we need to be putting information in places as well. And the change between push and pull, in terms of audiences driving where they find information, that's huge for what we do. And also audiences have changed. Obviously, HCPs are mostly now digital natives. That has a huge difference to how we approach them. But even patients these days are so different to patients even 10 years ago. They have access to things, they can find things, they have health literacy that's way beyond what we would have ever expected. They expect to be able to find information that would have once been behind a wall that they could never see. And likewise, companies want to be able to make that information available. So it changes the landscape. It's not just about AI. But yeah, how do we adapt as medical writers to bridge this gap where for some time there's going to be a lot of the work, maybe in excitement or over giddiness, outsourced to AI before people go, actually, that's going to have a collateral effect that we need to be thinking about in later years.
It's a really interesting
Annette,
thing.
go on, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it's very interesting. I think that at some point, you know, people are worried, like quite rightly so, about making sure that what these AI tools produce is accurate and, you know, relevant and all those kind of things. But I kind of feel like at some point, and it probably isn't too far away, pretty much it'll be on point. Like, it's going to do a really good job. The issue for me is that you might have the same output from like your great medical writer and your AI, But if a medical, there's so much more, there's the foundations, or like it's the tip of the iceberg is the output. And the medical writer has gone through a slow and, laborious process, but of churning that information, of looking at stuff that that medical writer knows what didn't make it to the final draft or first draft or whatever it is. And they've browsed, right? They've looked at a load of data, a load of, they've considered lots of ways of putting the story together. So the understanding that underpins what they produce is solid. And you could ask that medical writer, like, oh, why did you write about that? Or why didn't you include this? And they're like, well, I didn't include this because I read it there, but then I thought about it and it didn't really make sense in this context. And that's what I would expect from a medical writer, to be able to defend every single point of the argument, the story, the data that they're producing. What my concern is that, yeah, the AI has produced something just as good, but there's nothing underneath it. It's got no foundations,
And it's
and
not
we
just
lose
as good,
that.
is it? Because it's, and this is, I like this term I heard yesterday, again from this consulting industry, like mediocrity, as in MEH, mediocrity. It's just like, it's all right. It's just the job, probably. But where's the, where's the enthusiasm and the passion and the, yeah, that's what we'll be
Sorry,
missing.
I'm going to jump in again because I think there's a couple of points in there I want to pick up on. Firstly, the mediocrity thing, I think is, I mean, I talk a lot about the fact that truth is most people are happy with mediocrity. That's just the truth of it, yeah. And if you put in on top of that the procurement type guys and gals who are squeezing the budgets, they just, I mean, why not? This looks okay. It's okay. Well, but also a point in there, I think, and I think what I'm disagreeing with you slightly on, Liz, is or maybe I'm just seeing it from a different point of view. To take Annette's point, if the two outputs can be the same as far as a reader is concerned, if the objective is to produce something for a reader, let's call them a reader, and communicate a message, whatever, from their point of view, it can be exactly the same. And you could argue that if there are quicker, cheaper, whatever ways of doing it, that's one way to do it. What Annette's also talking about, and I think what Liz, you're talking about, is that behind that there's all this other stuff that might be really important in terms of you working out what you're doing and how your communication program is developing and all sorts of other stuff. But if your objective is to produce I don't know, a 500 word article or blog or a bit of video or something that has a particular objective to communicate to that audience person, I think we are absolutely in the era where you can do that much cheaper, much faster, much simpler by using AI technology. And there is a lot of pressure to go that way. And that's
I'm going to let
really,
someone else get a
really,
word in,
really fundamental.
Peter, but I will pick up on that very quickly, and then I'll see if Liz and Ellie agree. But
Please.
so this comes to that: what is the job of the medical writer? And for me, the job of the writer is much broader than just producing a piece of content. And knowing that background allows our medical writers to offer something of value to their clients beyond what is written on the page. So in the course of developing that piece of content, they've learned a whole host of other things, so they can, things come up in the future that they can say, oh, we should do a piece about that, or we should do this exercise or that exercise, and that kind of thing. So for me, that becomes, and if we talk about writing specifically, this is about, that really wide, a broad job of a medical writer, and which is not for me simply writing words on a page.
Yeah, so each
Exactly.
piece of
But
content
it may
is
not
not
be
just in
what the
isolation.
person fund, but it may not be what the funder wants. The person who's commissioning this work, I get the fact that an agency, I mean, and there's lots of real, I mean, I totally buy into what you're saying and agree with it. But but objectively, the objective is to produce a bit of content, and there's a whole
Not to produce
system of,
one, though.
well,
It's never
okay,
just to
but
produce
talk
one
from a
piece of content. It's always about how you are doing a range of different things that are building towards a particular strategic vision. And you can't do each thing in isolation, because otherwise they're going to be inconsistent and they're not going to be building towards what you're trying to achieve. Everything has to be kind of taken together as a whole, and that's how a medical writer really adds their value, because they're going to be involved in multiple things across the program, and that's what the investment is for. But also, as another kind of a support for the agency model, medical writers working in agencies are usually not just working on one account. They're going to be working with another client. They're going to be sitting next to people who work with multiple other clients on different types of project. And all of those sort of connections and discussions that they're going to be having in the background in the agency will mean that the work they do on one particular client's account is going to be stronger and have more sort of useful ideas and suggestions that are also going to add value to that client and support them achieving their objective.
Can I
Of
put in
course,
here? Because
and
I feel
that's
like
the agency model that we're defending here, okay? And we've probably all got a certain amount of interest in that, okay? I still fundamentally question whether you can look at it from a different point of view. Let's take a very simple example. The sort of PSL plain language, like PLS type of scenario, okay? Where I don't know, maybe Liz, you've got a view on this or a stance on this, but companies out there have put in place mandates. There has to be a PLS with every article that's published, right? And you go, and I've had, and we've all had discussions with medical writers about how important the expert medical writer is in developing the PLS, okay? But you can produce a PLS very simply by sticking it into a machine and coming out this side, right? Now, I'm simply arguing that some people in around the table are sitting there going, we just want a PLS, we want to tick that box and get it out. They're not all sitting there thinking, well, it's really important to have lots of critical thinking going on here, da, 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 because of A, that makes it better in some way, and B, because it might help when we do something for somebody else. I'm trying to be a bit provocative, but I also believe it's important to be a little bit provocative and not just see it from the agency point of view. So I don't know. You can tell me and shut me down also, but Liz, is anything that I'm saying making any sense?
I think just be done. I think that's the point. I don't this conversation shouldn't be about like the land grab for what's left. It shouldn't be about like fighting each other. The point is the industry is probably changing, and we want people to be able to take their careers with it, because we don't want a load of redundant medical writers. What we want is to help people to see what the next opportunity is. And I think it's in my mind, the biggest opportunity is a combination of what Annette and Eleanor say. Like, you need to be the human that brings it together. Because one thing, you can't prompt AI or any technology. Let's just take it away from AI. You cannot do anything if you don't know what it is you need to do, and you can't do that unless you understand the context and the background and the commercial strategy. Content strategy, go that way. Stop thinking about the writing and invest your energies in learning about content strategy. Start thinking about how like brand identity and voice and customer segments and all these things that kind of help you to have value then in terms of a new kind of area where maybe the grunt work is diminishing. But I don't think we need to kind of argue about whether it's whether agencies will survive or not. I think what the question is how do we adapt ourselves? How do we adapt our skills that we have and move them towards a new generation? And I think it's probably only, to be honest, the generation that are sitting on the audience that are already medical writers, or even maybe just starting out in medical writing, because the ones after that, they'll be the ones that are driving a whole new thing. Like, we can't even imagine what that looks like. And they'll be the ones that are kind of innovating something. We're like, when did you last hear somebody ask for a reprint carrier, for example? Like, things that have just expired and new things have come up that we would never have dreamt of. And that will also happen. The one point I would like to just make while I have the mic is, I think the thing that's really important, whether we say omnichannel or whatever we say, nobody understands that word. Everybody has a different definition. It's essentially what we're talking about is insights-driven content that is kind of immortal and that lives on, because digital doesn't go away. Even if you get rid of it, like in the old days, if you made a mistake, you just burnt all the stack of reprint carriers, and that never happened. You can't do that these days. So having a digital asset management tool where you can pull anything that suddenly becomes untenable or unapproved is really important. And also remembering what you're putting out there will become your legacy and will become what you're known for and will go across multiple platforms. It's a huge risk exposure then. The exposure is so much greater. So also for AI, it's greater, but also to some extent, I mean, how many times do we get on a plane and see a pilot driving it these days? Not very often. And there are people that say if you feel it bump, then that was because the pilot actually did land it this time. So, we trust our
So,
lives,
okay.
literally, to
So, do you
artificial
need to be a
intelligence.
writer? Okay, so let's accept everyone's nodding away at this importance of the writer being a sort of involved, but as a content strategist, as a QC, as a whatever. But do they have to be a writer to do that role?
And this is the question, isn't it? Do we have to go through the pain of learning to be a medical writer to be able to do the other stuff? I would argue at the moment, probably yes, because I think it's still, yeah, I don't think we can hand it all over yet. But I do, I could imagine an environment where you don't need the language skills anymore. And this is to sort of my interest in this whole debate, this whole topic, because AI can also translate things fantastically. It can also write things in any language. You can write something in English, then go, right, great, now do it in German. And it will. So do we need native speakers of languages? Maybe not. Do we need the biggest artists and creative language users? Maybe not. But what we
I would
do.
argue that we do still need to have the language skills because if you don't have accurate language skills, then you are not going to be able to prompt effectively. And
But
which language you're using may not necessarily be as important, but being able to articulate exactly what you're looking for is very important for getting what you need out.
then also you can also ask Gen AI to make you a prompt. So you can like roughly say, I want to write a prompt that will tell me to do this. Can you write that prompt nicely? And it will do it for you. And then it's like, it's like Googling Google. It just carries on. And also
Yeah,
you can use AI
absolutely.
tools to proofread material and say, is this suited to a lay audience? Is this suited to a reading age of whatever? So actually,
Poor
probably
Lynette.
still would
Annette's
take
looking very
people.
frustrated. Get
Well,
involved,
it
Annette.
just I agree with Liz, and it really pains me to say it because I think writing is a great skill to have, and it frustrates me when I read things in everyday life and in the course of my job that are not written very well. And I love to celebrate the craft of writing. But I have to agree with Liz. I think, actually the need to be able to craft really good kind of content from an editorial point of view is probably that's becoming less important because you can just put it in a chat GPT and it will make it read well. There's no doubt
Chat
about it.
GTP can use apostrophes correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I hate to say it because I love the skill of writing and I love to see it done well. But yeah, I think that part of a medical writer's job is becoming less important, probably. So if we're talking about the future and maybe we're not talking about 2024, but who knows, then I think those other skills, as we talked about before, because I think medical writing is a much broader skill set, they're going to be dialed up. The need for that critical thinking, the need to understand data and different sources of data, I think, as the world gets more connected and the things we write about are not just clinical data, but also are taking data from other, areas. Those kind of skills are probably going to become more important, and the actual editorial skills, which I love so much, are probably going to be taking more of a backseat.
I think,
Can I
though,
just
that
ask?
language
Oh,
skills
sorry, I
still
didn't mean to cut you, did you?
underpin a lot of those kind of analytical and critical thinking aspects that we're talking about. So that I don't think the language skills are going to become unnecessary, because if you don't have the sort of linguistic nuance to be able to take something apart, then you're not going to be able to do the critical analysis.
I suppose
Okay,
there's a kind of
we've only
point
got
of
a
like,
few
has it
minutes.
used the right word? Is it the right nuance and that kind of thing? And I think that probably is
Just
important.
out of interest, Annette, I'm just going to pin you down a little bit. In the situation you're in at Langman, whatever. I've got two questions, I suppose. I should never have two questions thrown at you at the same time. But how much guidance are you getting from your pharma clients as to how much you use AI, and how much training are you starting to bring in for your writers about using AI? So there's two parts to that question, but
I would say
if you could
guidance
just.
from clients, I haven't really seen much. We're getting clients say, we want to use AI. But that's the question, like, we want to use AI, but
Now go
they
and do
don't.
it.
Well, yeah, go and do it. But I'm like, well, what exactly do you want to
What do you
achieve?
mean?
What's your objective? So that's quite hard, isn't
Say
it?
we've
Because a
used
lot of,
AI.
yeah, exactly. Literally, I mean,
Exactly.
there's more than one.
Yeah.
So lots of people just saying we want to use AI because they want to be, doing something cool and interesting. Which is causing, I don't know, a few things to think about, let's put it like that. And in terms of what we're doing, we are encouraging people to play with it judiciously, obviously. All the caveats, not putting any data out there that's confidential for the world to see. But I think it's the kind of thing where, I mean, you said this, I think, before, Peter, like you just have to play with it. you can't we can't like deliver a a training here and a training there. We've have I mean the advantage of working in a big network is there are multiple kind of webinars on like prompt engineering and lots of things like that. So people have things that they can access to kind of help them on that journey. But I think we just want people to kind of play with it. And then we're trying to kind of basically share learnings and ask people like what have you used? What's been successful? What hasn't been successful? And again, just yeah, to make it clear very ethically and properly and all that kind of thing. But
Okay. Can
sort
I
of
again? I'm going to fire a couple of quick questions now, but Annette, just one more for you. And is it influencing your recruitment? Are you looking for people in any way differently? Are you looking for different skills? Again, I'm sticking with medical writers. Are you looking for different sorts of people who maybe show an aptitude for some? I don't know quite what I expect you to say, but I just wonder whether it's having any influence yet on the recruitment of people into the business.
not demonstrably from our side, I don't
Okay.
think. I mean, I've always wanted to hire people who, have had that
Curious.
passion to do to try things out and who are kind of proactive and, want to always learn and those kinds of things. So that's, and a sort of bit sort of self-starters and that kind of thing. So I think I would always look for that. And I think those kind of people, the people that are going to, go and like have a go and think, oh, I wonder if I could use it for this. Oh, that's a great idea. And actually kind of take a little bit of time to be interested in, I don't know, doing things more efficiently or doing things better or, improving and that kind of thing. But I don't think that that's really any different from the kind of person I would have, looked
Okay.
for before.
Ellie, I'm going to bring you in, and I'd like to, A, have you got any quick reflections on what's been talked about? And as we get into training and training new people, but I'm going to specifically ask Ellie to lead into the freelancers. And I know you do a lot to support the freelancers. There's a lot of concern, and I think quite rightly a lot of concern amongst freelance medical writers. Again, let's keep this conversation specific about the fact that they are rapidly losing out here. They might have been an expert writer when they left even a few months ago, let alone a few years ago, to go and be a freelance writer, and they've been very confident about the fact they can do freelance writing. That's not a problem. And in fact, I've always argued a lot of freelancers sort of miss the fact that they're supposed to be investing in themselves along the way. They don't like learning and paying for training courses and all the rest of it. But what's happened in the last year, and it's coming through from the survey work we do and so on, is how concerned freelance writers, let's stick with them, are about whether they're able to in any way keep up, how to train, how to whatever. And that one of the problems is they're working with several different clients who are using AI in different ways. So again, just we're going to wrap up in a couple minutes. I'll have to. So can we just finish on this note a little bit? Let's think about the freelancers just for a moment. Ellie, any reflections on the new people coming in? But importantly, can you just say a few words about where you think it's going in freelance land from a training point of view?
So I think I have always recommended that anybody working as a freelancer has a proportion of their time that they will use for training. It doesn't have to be the same amount of time every week or anything like that, but factoring it into your planning when you are considering how much work you're going to take on and the kind of work that you're doing, especially now, is just fundamental to running a good freelance business because that's what you're doing as a freelancer. You're not just being a writer, you're running a business. Any business needs to invest in training for its staff, even if there's only one person who is involved. And I think part of that training is around doing the experimentation that Annette was talking about, because there isn't just one way of doing it. I think I've seen various people recommending different courses and things that you can do in the chat. And there may well be things that you can find to guide you through, especially if you're very new to it and don't know where to start. But having a go and finding different tools that you can play with in that sort of training time that you've given yourself, I think is the most important thing you can do. But also talking to other people. So checking in with other freelancers or people that you're working with in agencies around what they have done, what they've experienced, how they have used it within their work, so that you're getting input from as many sources as possible without overwhelming yourself completely. I think that's really the best approach for freelancers at the moment.
It's really, really important. But the point is, as a freelancer, you're sitting there on your own, and you have, I mean, Annette's got an organization. We've got writers in Annette's group are talking to each other. So as a freelancer sitting on your own, going, I'm seeing these webinars, I'm seeing this chat, I'm seeing people talk about AI. What do I do? Where do I go? I mean, I'm not suggesting we answer that problem now, or we and I guess none of us can actually just go, the course to take is this. But there's a real problem there. And I think freelancers need to wake up to that. I suppose I would certainly say just freelancers need to wake up. I don't know what the answer is, but they are going to, the gap is going to, is widening very, very fast for freelancers. I think they need to think about that. What just did, do you have a reflection on the skills or skill training for people either in the business or coming into the business that Annette was talking about? Just to come back to that sort of point.
So for new people coming into Medcoms in general, the kind of skills that they need, I think I agree with Annette that it's more about having the right attitude rather than having specific skills. So knowing that you've got a lot to learn and you're going to need to experiment and take on board feedback, I think those are still the fundamental aspects to being a good medical writer, along with the writing skills. But knowing that things are changing and you're going to have to go along with that and be flexible to new approaches and different methodologies along the way.
Okay, we should wrap up. Liz, have you got some final words from your perspective and having heard the conversation? I mean, any hints and help for the any agency people that are looking at this and wondering what the future's about?
Well, I was just thinking about the freelance thing as well, but also it applies
All
to
right.
agency writers and any agency person. I think take every opportunity you can to talk to your clients and ask them quite directly and bluntly what's going on. Like, because I think the only way to get a window on what's going on inside farm is to kind of stick your nose in a bit, and they're not going to answer you in front of a whole, in a pitch or in front of a situation where procurement's sitting there and they're not sure what they can and can't say. But go for a coffee with them on site, give them a chat and see if just engage in conversation with as many different people as you can and find out what's happening on the ground. And also just, network and talk to people in other positions in other agencies and, form your network like this, for example. Obviously it's hard from a freelance position to get such exposure, but some of it's also got to come from you individually. Like, it's on you to ask the questions and to be interested. And generally speaking, people like to talk about what they're doing, so they can be quite open and free about things. You just have to pick the right time. But I would definitely say keep your eyes open and don't. I know it's very tempting, especially as writers, we're very proud of our background and what we do, of our linguistic skills, but let's not be pig-headed about this. Like, we're not infallible ourselves. We're also very easily replaceable, and that's good because it means that we don't always have to do this for a living. But like, we have to be open to the fact that things will change and learn to adapt to that change and not be kind of standing our ground going, oh, I'm never going to be replaced by anything. Because the reality is we will. And if we open our eyes to it sooner rather than later, you've got more chance of finding an alternative route in your career if that's what's needed.
We should wrap up. I keep saying that, don't I? There's a mass of stuff in the chat. I know we're ignoring probably most of it, but it's fascinating. And thank you very much to the audience for because we will sit down and look at it later. Certainly from my point of view, it will help inform what else we do and so on and so forth. But there's all sorts of stuff going on in the chat I haven't been able to keep up with. I think one of the things I guess the message I do buy into at the moment is in our sort of medical writing. No, I mean none of us are talking about replacing medical writers anytime soon. It's but the role can change and the AI we've. And the AI in medical writing tends to be about whether AI can do the medical writing. And we've talked about it a bit, but let's emphasize the fact that AI tools can support the process of, whether it's searching, researching, ideation, or checking, translation, whatever. It's not the simple conversation isn't about, as a writer, am I going to be replaced? But I will say what I've said very publicly a number of times now is I was involved not so long ago with medical writers who were much more at the sort of the blogging end and the sort of journalistic end and the sort of wellness, they are being hit very, very hard by technology that can do their job for them, and it's very, very simple. So medical writing is a very, very broad spectrum of activity, and there's lots of different activities and things involved in medical writing. It's not as simple as somebody putting some words on a page. But I think we all ought to just spend time from time to time thinking about the fact that. That spectrum is there and things are changing. And our particular role might be fine at the moment, or our particular role might adapt a little bit this way or whatever. But certainly, I think you've got to be thinking about it. Hopefully, we've given some people some food for thought there. I'm going to have to, these comments are coming too fast for me to keep up. Okay, so look, we're over time. We should stop. I'm keen to stop now because I'm keen to have a few minutes at the end when we can relax and be unrecorded. So I'm going to say huge thanks to you three for coming online and having a natter, as it were. I think it's fascinating. I know we could talk much more. I know we could argue a lot more. I know there is probably stuff we haven't addressed and all the rest of it. But I think, I believe, I hope that people have found it useful to sit and listen to you talk. So thank you so much for coming online. I think, I believe, I know I can talk for you and say that anyone can contact you via LinkedIn is the easy way. But let's keep these discussions going and hashtag MedComms, guys. Use that as a way of sort of talking about these issues. Anyone interested in what I'm doing, medcomsnetworking.com. And obviously there's lots more webinars coming up about these sorts of topics. So anybody listening to us at the moment, you don't have to rush away. We've got a few minutes left. But just for the moment, I'd like to ask the panelists to say goodbye and wish everybody a good day. Take care. Bye.